I'm Jason.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Usually Dave from the Digital Soup Podcast.
A proud member of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts
at GonnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the award-winning Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor, SP, and your reporters for this episode number 181 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Speak for yourself, numbnuts.
Love mixed quotes. And Michelle.
Even vigilantes have to pay their bills.
Sometimes you have to work at suds, soap, and whatever. I forget what it was, but yeah. Basically the DC Universe's version of Bed Bath & Beyond. We'll get into more of that later. This podcast is recorded Sunday, December 17, 2017, live on Geeks.live. Remember, our audio newspaper is chock full of facts, speculations, and spoilers about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV movie and comic universes.
That's right, and this evening we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could, and very well will, impact future episodes of shows such as Legends of Tomorrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Vixen, Constantine, maybe Black Lightning, maybe The Ray, and if we go crazy, we might spoil episodes of Smallville that are years old, because hey, we're nuts here.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GonnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
I can pretty much guarantee if I ever go back and actually watch any episodes of Smallville, I will be spoiling them on this podcast. But that depends on me actually watching episodes of Smallville. And to date, I've only watched one, and that was the one with the Green Arrow on it, which is laughable compared to our Arrow show. In the meantime, we're going to move on into the current episode of Legends of Tomorrow. Michelle, why don't you break it down for us?
Yes, this is season 3, episode 1, called Arubicon, aired Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. Director Rob Seidenglass also has directed 3 Rivendell, 2 episodes of Legends, and 1 Frequency. Written by Phil Klemmer, who's written 9 Legends, 3 Tomorrow People, and 12 episodes of Chuck. And the big guy himself, Mark Guggenheim, he's also written 15 episodes of Arrow and 9 episodes of Legends.
And Mark is my hashtag Arrowverse buddy over on Twitter. Since Michelle mentioned that this was aired back on the 10th of October, this was the first week of the CW shows that came on. We were going back to podcasts on the Legends of Tomorrow season this year, season 3. So on Monday, the CW DC Universe kicked off with Supergirl, with their episode 1 of season 3, Girl of Steel, and it rated in with a total live audience of 3.12 million people. That's on the 9th of October. Tuesday, which is the new mega day in the CW verse, at least for the fall, we'll get into that later. Flash, with the season 4 premiere episode, The Flash Reborn, brought in 4.77 million, definitely the most watched CW show of the week. Following that, and the 9 o'clock time slot, Legends of Tomorrow with Arubicon brought in 2.85. And then Thursday, Arrow on its Lonesome with the 6th season, episode 1 Fallout, brought in 2.70 million people. So all above 2, great job for their premieres. Looking forward to those ratings returning to that height in January. In the meantime, this episode was called Arubicon, and it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, any given Comic-Con, they're called cons. And I, beyond that, I was having a little bit of trouble figuring out what Arubicon meant to this episode. So, Michelle, why don't you bring us down the theme, and what is the title of the episode mean for the episode?
Well, it's true. Julius Caesar crashes mixed vacation. It's called a Rubicon, but Rubicon is a river, and it was the border between Gaul and Rome. And Caesar is in the process in the past of crossing the Rubicon in this episode. So that's what else I have. You guys want to add anything?
It sounds pretty good to me. I mean, we had Julius Caesar, a.k.a. JC, and it was an interesting aberration mechanism. Mick called it like three different things before they actually told him what it was. It was like mechanism and then ribbonism. What were the three things?
I don't remember all three.
Doesn't matter.
It's Mick, though. It was entertaining as all hell. That's all I know.
Right. So then we had the time travel, Michelle, right? We had the time travel and basically they broke time. We saw that time was broke.
Snap.
Yeah, this takes place right after the season two ender when they come back and everything's broken. There's dinosaurs in the Big Ben and everything's twisted around. And they're like, oh my gosh, what do we got to do? What do we got to do? And then the dinosaur, which I believe is Gertrude, is coming along. And then suddenly she disappears because all of a sudden Rip is back being a jerk because he's formed his little time burrow. And he's like, you know what, you guys, I got this and you're fired.
Yeah, right. Like they didn't do anything except for they dropped out of hyper time or whatever. And then all of a sudden they broke time and like you're fired and they didn't really do anything. What? I didn't catch that. That was actually Gertrude?
I'm pretty sure. I hope. I want it to be.
Okay, we'll play it off that way. Chris, what's your definitive vote on that? Was it Gertrude or was it not?
Sure, why not?
I thought it was great. I thought the time windows as they open and close, I don't know if it was based on anything, but I thought that was great that they were actually doing that. And just letting the aberrations go through the time windows, and that solved everything. That and the flashy thingy that they were using, which I don't know if flashy thingy is actually copyrighted or trademarked by Men in Black, but that's exactly what it is.
Oh, it's totally the Men in Black flashy thingy. They just can't call it the deneuralizer, which I think is what it was called in the show. Or movie, rather.
Yeah, that's right.
So we go 6 months into the future, and we have Sarah working retail. Poor Sarah. Have you guys ever worked retail? Do you know her pain? Because I've worked retail.
Walmart. I had to work there.
I did inventory. I forget the name of the company that did inventory, but I actually had one of those big, huge 10-key calculators on my hip as I went around and had to 10-key all the SKUs in, and it was at night, like a Target or a Walmart or something would Shopko would close down at night, and we'd go in and we'd have to do the entire inventory of their store before they opened up again. So, no, I didn't work retail, but I was in retail stores.
Yeah, it's a special... Man, you meet a whole bunch of different types of people and you interact with different levels of humanity when you work retail. Trust me.
All my kids have, so I've heard stories as they come home from work. Yep. As a matter of fact, I just heard one today, which I'll save for after the podcast because it's not PC friendly, I guess. And there you go.
Oh my, those are the best stories.
Exactly. But okay, Sarah's working retail. Where are the rest of the people?
Well, we have Ray in Silicon Valley working for a dating app company called Upswipe because this is what gets me. He Palmer Tech and everything like that, and he has these great inventions, and he's sidelined because he gave his company to Felicity, who, quote, ran it into the ground. So I guess after you do that, you lose all respect from Silicon Valley.
I guess. And you know what's bad is that I just plugged in Upswipe into my iPhone. And no, there's no iOS app called Upswipe.
That's because it's this version of Tinder. You swipe up and down with those who you like instead of left, right.
Pretty much. And I've never had to use Tinder. So that's just what I assumed it was that because Tinder didn't exist when I was still dating.
Yeah, no, Love at AOL existed when I was last dating.
Yes, and there is no Upswipe on Android either. Here you go, everyone watching live. No upswipe. There's Tinder that shows up when you search for it.
I wonder if there's one on Windows.
Windows phone, yeah, I'm sure. I can try and look in the Windows App Store on my computer.
Poor Ray. Yeah, he's got these great ideas, and the director of the company is just sitting there going, no, it's totally different because I'm doing this. And then what did he bring to the CEO? He wanted to do something like with time travel or something like, no, it was his shrinking technology. And he couldn't do it because the guy wanted to work on the right direction of swiping. Like, okay, totally missing the point there, dude.
Yeah, and then we have Nate. So, Chris, Nate is working with one of your favorite people, isn't he?
It's true. He's out in, not Star City. Why do I want to say Star City? He's in Central City with Wally. And Wally is the Flash during this time. Remember, Barry's stuck in the Speed Force. I knew exactly what I meant. So you've got Nate teamed up with Wally, and evidently they shared identities at some point during the off season, because I don't recall them knowing each other beforehand.
Maybe they found it through upswipes.
That's it. Well, upswipes was a good gag throughout this episode, so as much as we're making fun of it right now, they did a pretty good job with it.
Nate mentioned that he was the second most popular superhero in Central City, so that's saying a lot considering all the superheroes that are there. And I realize what you just said, that Wally was there in The Flash, Barry wasn't. So there's that, but there's a lot of other. There's Cisco, right?
Yeah, Killer Frost. Nate thinks very highly of himself, and sometimes too highly of himself. He's probably more like the fourth favorite superhero in Central City.
Maybe fifth.
I would argue that Mick Rory would be a higher level superhero, and I did that in quotes, by the way, if you're listening to audio, hero, than Nate is.
And then, as we said before, Mick is on vacation in Aruba, and as we learn, he's been having a trail of petty larcenies and is probably contracted more STDs than we can list because he's having a real good time.
Good for Mick. He needs to have a little vacation. He's had it rough.
He's there on a bender, as Sarah calls it later, and he's just sitting on the beach, you know, in shorts and an open Hawaiian short with a frou-frou drink in his hand, by the way. It wasn't a beer. It was a frou-frou drink. I don't know what it was. A Mai Tai. It was daiquiri, whatever it was. And he got JC, Julius Caesar, on a horse going in front of him, who knew perfect English, by the way. And did you guys notice that the metal sides of his helmet were basically bulging in and out like leather straps rather than the metal that they're supposed to be to protect his cheek? That was kind of funny. Anyway, JC's shadow overreaches Mick and he's like, get out of my light if you're not here to fill my glass, cabana boy. It just turned out that, Mick could take down JC. That was interesting.
For a bit, but we'll get into that. And then we eventually time travel to 49 BC in Gaul because, as we learned, Julius Caesar is an anachronism. That is what the proper name of it is.
He's an A-word.
Yeah, A-word. And, you know, it looked believable, this random Vancouver forest standing in for Gaul and such.
And you know it was just some Stargate-like forest in Vancouver somewhere.
Yeah. And what else happens in Gaul, Chris?
Well, Caesar, we find out he's a little smarter than we think because, he steals Nate's book of how Julius Caesar rose to power and things like that and basically uses it to remap time and take over the entire world. He's a devious little monkey.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. You're standing there next to JC, and he's just been flashy thingy. You going to take a selfie with him?
Of course. Why not? I love selfies. You've seen my Instagram. There's so many selfies. No, there's not. There's like
not one.
There's maybe one or two selfies on there. I don't get selfies, guys. I don't understand it.
Nate is so stupid.
We've been saying that forever, though.
I know. We said that a lot last season, how Nate is stupid. It's a theme this season. But finally, they fix everything, and then we get this little flash into 1942, because as we learn, Amaya dumps Nate, and that's why he's being such a, well, whinier than usual. And we see her do her thing and kill some soldiers, and that will come back in future episodes.
It will. And before we leave this, I got to ask you guys a question. When she taps on her necklace, the amulet, is that what it's called?
Totem.
Totem. When she taps on her totem, she gets several animals simultaneously rather than just one. Is this the first time that we've seen this? This is a new power for the totem.
Yeah, it's like the totem's turned up to 11.
Or like turn up to a million.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything in case somebody hasn't watched Legends, but a future episode deals with what's going on with her and the totem.
Yeah, there's a lot in the future going on with the totem. So should we shelve that for now and talk about the fight scenes?
Yeah, we should talk about the fight scenes. Now, I'm going to go to my favorite. It's just a short little fight. It's when Sarah and Caesar are on the beach, and Caesar doesn't want to come quietly, especially agreeing to submit to a woman, and he puts up a fight, and then Sarah kicks his ass. I love it. The guys are hanging back and they're like, should we help? And they're like, no. Yeah, we're worried about Julius Caesar. We're not worried about Sarah.
Yeah, and they were right because Sarah immediately takes him down. And I think the ninja skills that Sarah learns, they're not timeless. They started at some point in the past. And I'm wondering if that was before or after the Roman Empire. I think it was after the Roman Empire that ninjas started to rise up in the East. I could be mistaken about that, but I would think that they'd be advanced fighting techniques for Caesar to deal with. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, they'd probably seen nothing like the fighting techniques that Sarah has learned through her course of being in the League of Assassins, what, twice? Because remember, she was in the original timeline, and then when they all got split apart into separate timelines, she went to go back to the League again. So she's been trained twice.
Yeah, she's a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, no doubt.
I wouldn't want to get in a fight with her.
Uh-uh. She'd kick my butt.
She would.
Mick didn't do so well against Caesar, did he, SP?
He kind of did. I mean, he took him out, he tied him up, and then they had the little tete-a-tete, but then he let him go, basically, because the Time Bureau was being slow in getting to him, and he was able to escape through a toga party, because that's what was going on. It was basically spring break toga party with a bunch of college kids on the beach looking like they were in traditional Rome, so he's able to blend into the background at that point in time. If it wasn't for that, things would have been fine. He would have been able, Mick would have won that fight. It was just his surprise ability to blend into his surroundings that JC got away.
He also got his nose broken.
That's probably not the first time either.
Probably not, but it was his best feature.
So, Chris, we end up having a nice big fight at the end, don't we?
We do. We like big giant fights, don't we?
Yes.
Yes, and we even get the Mighty Firestorm showing up again, which I enjoy seeing. We all know Firestorm shows up rarely because it's expensive to do. And here we have Firestorm basically lighting up a bunch of soldiers, stopping everything. Rey and Nate are able to successfully get the book back that's been stolen, beat up a couple guys. Mick has his flamethrowing gun, of course, because why wouldn't Mick have it? And finally, Sarah frees Sharp, and they do some cool kicking ass together. Maybe the signs of a potential team up in the future?
Did you like that Jax got the history wrong between the Grecian gods and the Roman gods? And they're like, I'm Ares, the Roman god of war. And the professor's back there saying, oh, well, Jefferson, that's not right.
It was pretty funny, though.
It's Mars.
Basically, I don't think it would have really mattered to the Roman soldiers because they were dealing with fireballs coming down from the sky. And oh, by the way, we won't spoil anything, but seeing Firestorm now in this episode and knowing what's coming up, it was really all that special. I wasn't downtrodden about it at all. I was like, this is cool being able to go back and rewatch this. This is awesome.
Yeah, I like it when they're on screen. And that move, basically, Sharp is on the ground and she uses the chain and Sarah. It was really cool. Like, kind of like Sarah.
She ran on the shields.
Yeah.
So I watched this really intently. I'm like, that has got to be a stunt person to pull this off. It was actually Sarah, the full shot through. Now, they could have CGI'd something and I just didn't see it, but it looked like it was Sarah Lance doing that.
Katie does a lot of her own stuff. I follow her on Instagram and some of the posts that she shares of her training and rehearsing fights.
Yeah, it's damn impressive.
In the grand scheme of things, this was kind of an easy one to do. And I was wondering if the time agency lady, if she's an actual stunt person or an actor, because it looked like she knew what she was doing as well. Now, this is kind of an easy stunt in the grand scheme of things, because all you're doing is you're whipping around another person on a chain, which is probably secured to your wrist. But those two fought well together. And again, if you fast forward to where we are at the mid-season break, you're kind of looking at this and going, I know where this is going. This is pretty cool to watch.
Exactly.
So according to IMDb, Jess McCallum, who plays Agent Sharp, is a classically trained dancer who studied from the age of 3 for 18 years and is still dancing today. So it would appear that her background is not necessarily in stunt work, but as dance and things like that. And you go and look in her IMDb and it doesn't seem much like stunt work normally.
But she's very athletic then, if she's still dancing as an adult. Yeah, okay. That's pretty cool. I didn't peg her for a dancer either, but that's really cool that she is.
And Katie's a dancer in real life as well, so there's a good correlation.
There is. Matter of fact, there's probably a closer correlation between dance and fighting than there is like playing football and actual fighting. Yes, there's the raw physicalness of it, but the actual moves that you have to make, especially in martial arts, it's more dance-like than just one-on-one shoving.
Yeah, I'm no great dancer nor a great stunt person, but I imagine there are some connections you can make when you are doing the two.
You know what I just heard? I heard that Chris will be the next contestant for Dancing on the Stars from the Gonna Geek Network.
There's a YouTube version of Dancing with the Stars, which might be slightly more likely, but still impossible.
Nothing's impossible.
Oh, God. Now I can't get that out of my head. Speaking of Sarah, as we mentioned before, everybody gets fired and the Wave Rider gets taken away from our legends. And Sarah gets a phone call from Mick and her boss doesn't like that she took a personal call while working. And Sarah is like, you know what? I quit. And I like how when she walks out, she like tosses some of the stock on the floor. That's my favorite.
Not the knife throwing, but the actual getting into the shelves and throwing everything on the floor. That was a nice move.
I like that. And they know where the Time Bureau is, especially Sarah. And they get in because she took a badge from a guy she slept with who worked at the Time Bureau. Oh, I love that.
So this is interesting. We never find out who that guy is. I think if I'm a betting man, I'll bet you that's Gary.
I bet it is, too. I want it to be Gary.
I do, too.
Who we haven't met yet, but everybody knows at this point in time of the season.
And I love how she leads the team to steal the Wave Rider. And when they're on the Wave Rider, I'm just going to skip to Gideon. Because the Wave Rider is being used as a classroom, and it's been used as a classroom for 5 years, and they power on the Wave Rider, and Gideon's like, what's going on? And they're like, yeah, you've been a classroom, but we're coming back, and, you know, we're going to steal you, and we're going to go do this. And Gideon's just like, okay, Captain.
Yeah, so a bunch of problems I had with that. First of all, Gideon, how was she asleep for 5 years? I mean, I think she would have woken herself up at one point in time saying, this is not right. I can't believe I'm asleep. But okay, the other part is the Time Bureau kept on saying this is our ship. I would argue if I was the Legends that this is our ship and you stole it from us. Kind of a Millennium Falcon sort of thing. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't belong to the Time Bureau. The Wave Rider belongs to the Legends.
Well, it belongs to Rip, technically.
No, Rip gave it up when he left. The ownership transferred over to the Legends at that time, in my mind. I bet you maritime law would back me up too.
What about space law?
Which is based on maritime law.
All right, so let's trace this. The Wave Rider with Gideon was Rip's time ship.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went rogue from the Time Masters.
Right.
By stealing the Wave Rider.
Yep.
Still captain, was able to have codes last year to override. But then he did, at the end of season two, he did acknowledge Sarah as captain. And he did say that the ship is hers because that she is the captain of the Wave Rider. Yeah, he didn't have the right to take it.
Nope, he didn't. Did not at all. And this is a good time to remind everybody that we're recording live on Sunday night, the 17th of December. If you want to join our chat, you can come by any Sunday night, 6 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live and sign into the chat room. But absolutely, Michelle, that is what I'm saying, is that they had no ownership rights of the Wave Rider at all. It is the Legends owned ship. So they're not really stealing it. They're getting it back. And if anybody stole it, the Time Bureau stole it from the Legends.
Yeah, Chris, what do you think of this version of Rip? Because in season one, we had Rip who went rogue and wanting vengeance on his family. Then we had Rip who was time scattered, came back, was evil, and then left. And now we get this version.
It's Rip's ongoing evolution to try and find purpose as things progress. And you could argue he's found purpose pretty well here because he's created an efficient organization to help deal with the fact that they broke time to try and save everything at the end of last season. It's kind of interesting seeing him in a position of authority where everyone actually seems to listen to him, whereas the Legends kind of gave him a lip service and then kind of did whatever they wanted to do. And then more so in season two, just kind of made him part of the team and only listened when they wanted to. Now he's in a position of authority, and you would argue he might be one of the best qualified, being the fact he's a time master from the very beginning of things, helped destroy that, but also is familiar with their policies, so maybe he knows what he's doing to make this Time Bureau? Maybe he's learned?
Yeah, I have a question. In the rewatch here, I was uncertain of the pecking order of what was going on in the Time Bureau, because it didn't sound like he was actually in charge. It was like he was an outside consultant that had overreigning seniority, but still couldn't be the one to actually tell the Time Bureau what to do.
Wasn't he the director at one point, they said, or am I misremembering?
See, but that lead agent that came in, I can't remember his name, but you know, he's a very famous bit actor that's been in a lot of sci-fi stuff. It seemed like he was actually in charge and Rip was not.
I didn't read it that way, but I guess it could be.
Yeah, I would encourage you to go back and watch it if you haven't already. This is a Rubicon, the premiere episode of season three of Legends Tomorrow, and try to figure out where exactly is Rip in the pecking order at the Time Bureau. At this point in time, I'd have to call him a consultant. He's not actually in charge.
Yeah, and a couple of episodes from here, the Time Bureau has a problem with Rip, and he's not in the position of authority as he seems to be now. I don't want to spoil it for people. So yeah, there seems to be something going on, but it looks like he started it and got people somehow, and he got money somehow, and he was able to form treaties somehow. It's Rip.
Right. You know, something's going to go wrong at some point in time when Rip's involved. Heck, when the Legends are involved and they admit it. What was their motto? Let's screw up stuff less worse this time or something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes we screw things up for the better.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the Legends' new motto. That's the only thing I liked about Nate in this episode is that he actually said that line.
Sarah agreed. That's our new motto. Or that should be our new motto, whatever she said. It was a little bit out of character for Sarah, but I ran with it.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that developed was the Firestorm relationship. We learned that Jax and Martin have to meet up weekly to bond. And we learn that Stein is going to be a grandpa and Jax has quit school because it's difficult to learn about engineering when you've been on a spaceship traveling through time and all that type of stuff.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that, because even guys that have learned their trade out in the field, like, I will equate this to Deadliest Catch. If you go to the Deadliest Catch and you're on one of those 150-foot boats, the engine room, and you become an engineer, the engine room, you have to know a thing or two about mechanics, because those engines, they're constant use and they constantly need some sort of maintenance. So you'll learn a lot out in the field about how they work, but you don't necessarily know how to design them. You don't know how to properly plan for, like, maybe a replacement or properly engine a new boat or something like that. And that is done in school. And I, being an actual rocket scientist myself, I know that there's a difference between actually working on rockets and doing the classroom theoretical stuff behind it. But I think that Jefferson could have definitely benefited from classroom work, because even engineers, like I said, out in Deadliest Catch, they have to go to school to maintain certifications in order to get that engineering certification to get paid as an actual engineer. And the ship is then able to obtain its insurance because it has a certified engineer on board. So I will equate the same thing here. Now, nobody's going to certify him as being an chief engineer for a timeship, because they just don't exist in 2017. But it's that type of thinking that it was an easy storyline, easy plot line. But in real life, I know it's different.
Right, you are.
What do we think about the callback in their relationship to season one? Because for those of you who might not remember, in season one, when the Legends were being formed, Jax was like, I don't want to do this. And then Stein drugged him. And then he wakes up on the Wave Rider. But now, at the end, Jax wants to stay. Martin wants to go. And then finally, Martin agrees to stay, because he finally admits what he did in season one.
I think he did at some point in seasons one or two kind of say, I forced you into this. But at that point in time, they'd both kind of buried the hatchet in that regard, and Jax felt like it was the right call. And now, remember, Martin's life has changed because he has a daughter that he created by accident by messing with time. And now he kind of wants to be the family man, whereas the Martin you had in season one was the Martin who was living the adventure as Firestorm. He had just his wife, and they'd come to an agreement that he was going to do this heroing thing, and they'd still have time together from time to time. But his life has changed a great deal between season one and this point, and I kind of get where he's at. He wants the quiet life now. He's got a daughter and a grandchild coming, and I sort of see where he's coming from, and I sort of understand the fact that he pretty much tells Jax he owes him because he forced his hand to begin with.
So I have to go back a little bit, actually, to understand the full ramifications of this. And he was focused on his career for quite some time, and basically the technology that eventually led to the creation of Firestorm his entire life. So he was not the good family man all along. So there's a little bit about your life choices earlier on in your life affecting later on in life. And this is Martin Stein entering into what should be his retirement years, and he's not able to do that. And it's kind of heartbreaking to see this decision being made, knowing what's ahead of the pair in the future. But I don't necessarily have a sympathy towards Stein not wanting to be on the ship, because he's made his decision by becoming Firestorm to begin with. And he needs to continue with that decision, especially because of the partnership he has with Jefferson.
Yeah.
Chris, you want to talk about anything else about the episode?
I kind of like the Time Bureau here, but I know I shouldn't. But they display an efficiency that has been kind of lacking when it comes to all time travel throughout the entire series of this in trying to fix things. So I remember when I watched this the first time, I was like, I'm really curious to see where they go with this and how they continue this adversarial relationship between the Legends and the Time Bureau, because they don't mesh well together.
Oh my gosh, what did you guys think about that classroom scene?
Especially the one that we're like, oh, this is a training thing. According to Sec Code 37 of the time code, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, No, take action. Don't quote law at these people. They're not going to, they don't care about the law, especially when they have a flamethrower to your head. I would take action. I would cover. I would try to fight these people. I would try to do something, but nope. And once they actually took over the ship, the guy that got knocked out, did he get dragged off or has he been on the ship knocked out the entire first half of the season? Because we don't see how he's taken off the ship.
Magic.
I'm going to assume that the fellow classmates picked him up and dragged him off.
See, that's an assumption to make. We don't actually see it. It's like, show me the dead body when somebody dies. It's like, show me the guy leaving the ship. Otherwise, I'm going to assume he's been there taking notes the entire time.
Yeah, because then we see them in action in Gaul because Nate messed up with the book and they're like, oh, let's fix it before the Time Bureau comes. And Rip's like, too late. And they take over. And they don't really do very well because the book's there. They're going to sneak in. And Sarah's like, wait a minute. We've done this. I sense this. And they're like, oh, is this League of Assassins? And she's like, no, this is retail. This is how we find shoplifters. It's a trap.
It's a trap. Yeah, it's... Watching the Time Bureau at this point, this should be the Time Bureau on its A game. And they're just all hoity-toity and say, oh, we do this all the time. No, you don't. Now, there are some special occasions where these people realize what's going on around them and are trying to take advantage of them. And does anybody actually know, did anybody do the actual translation of what the United States of America was called on that map, by the way, that they showed?
I did not.
Oh, I got to find that. That is probably means something because they don't ever actually translate it. So just that Julius Caesar went on to conquer the world and then the new world. So I'm not sure exactly what that meant. Not a student of dead languages, so to speak. And that's exactly what that was. But anyway, it was fun to see them getting their butts handed to them. And then the legends have to go in and clean everything up. We get that great fight. And at the end, Agent Sharp is like, wow, I actually get to see you guys in person and I find out that you're worse than I thought you did. And Sarah's like, well, you're welcome. And it was just all interesting, the relationship between Sharp and Sarah that was going on there. And the Time Bureau, too, is the Time Bureau saying we can't let these guys out. And they're like, well, they're the ones who actually got it done. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, Rip says that they are like doing brain surgery with a chainsaw. Sometimes you need a chainsaw.
Yeah, and definitely with Malice. No, I don't think we've actually seen Malice yet at this point in time in the season. We've had hints of Malice. We might have seen where Malice is, but I don't think we've actually seen Malice yet. But definitely an overarching thing of this first half of the season, and we just don't get there. We don't see the full ramifications of it yet. So it's interesting.
No, they just kind of tease the fact that the legends might be necessary for some bigger end game.
Yeah, it's just interesting how sometimes when you are in the field and something very unpredictable happens, how things can fall apart. And that's what they demonstrated.
Every episode's like that. Things falling apart in the time stream, it must be Tuesday.
Yep. SP, any last thoughts about the episode?
It was really fun. I'm really glad we went back to watch this. Legends of Tomorrow, if you take the entire season of all four shows in the first half, this has been the fun one to watch again. I know they kind of slipped a little bit last year, but this year it's been fun. At least from what I'm remembering, the first episode and then the mid-season finale episode really bookended really well this first half of the season for all four shows. So I'm looking forward to going through this again. And anytime I can go back and rehear some of those Mick quotes, it's awesome. So I'm really looking forward to watching the rest of this as we get caught back up in the second half of the season.
Chris, do you think this was a good season opener for season three?
I thought it started out a little slow when I watched it originally, but it became fun and it reminded me of the flavor of Legends, which is it knows exactly what it is, a fun popcorn show. And you just sit back and you have fun and you get to hang out with a bunch of characters you've come to enjoy. So I had a lot of fun. It set everything up going forward. And I still think Legends of Tomorrow is the best of the CW television shows right now, because even when the episode's not good, it's still fun. It has its fun moments.
We got one more thing to say that we didn't cover. Remember the Upswipes little action on the beach where Gideon throws in the profile and blasts it all out? Did you like the profile picture, by the way?
Wasn't that just Amy Pemberton?
Yes. Who plays Gideon. Yeah, that was actually the voice of Gideon on the Upswipes. That was awesome.
That was.
And what did Mick say? Like, I'm totally into her or something like that?
Yeah, probably something like I'll do her or something, because that's Mick. That's a romantic.
Did you hit it?
Sorry, that's a few episodes away, chronologically.
All right. So again, any last thoughts before we close this out?
I'm good.
I am as well.
Yeah, I agree. This was fun. I liked how it picked up immediately. And then we get a new version of Rip. He's kind of a jerk again, but I kind of like it when we see a different version of a character. It's like Rip's become the Flash version of Wells. We've seen Tom Cavanaugh do different versions of Wells, and now we're seeing Arthur
Darvey.
Carville?
Darville.
Darville. There we go. Sorry. Do different versions of Rip. So that's fun.
If I was comparing the two on that level, a Tom Cavanaugh wins by a landslide there. But yeah, okay. I'm getting what you're saying, that he's playing different versions of the same character. Okay.
Yeah. We've seen different, you know, evolutions of Rip and Rip in different stages. So that's fun. I find that fun. Well, we are going to take 2 weeks off for the holiday, and we are going to come back January 7th, 2018. Oh, my goodness. And on that date, we are going to continue our discussion on Legends, because Arrow will still be off the air. And we're going to cover Season 3, Episode 2, Freak Show. It originally aired Tuesday, October 17, 2017. The Legends attempt to fix the anachronism in 1870 that happens to be P.T. Barnum's circus. Directed by Kevin Tankeron, writers Kito Shimizu and Grain Godfrey.
That's going to be a good one to watch, because there's a actor that I enjoy watching that plays P.T. Barnum. Pretty cool. All right, so with that, it's time to move on to the news. Live from the Starling Tribune's newsroom on floor 52 of the Starling Tribune main megalithic building in Starling City on Earth 2, we have Michelle starting off from the news desk on a good return story to Arrow.
We are finally getting Colton Hayes back as Arsenal.
Yes.
Colton Hayes is only coming back for a short arc, but that arc will kick off with the 15th episode of Arrow. We're thrilled to announce that Colton Hayes will be reprising his role as Roy Harper, executive producers Mark Guggenheim and Wendy Miracle said in a statement released confirming the actor's upcoming return to the show. Roy is called back to Star City to help resolve an urgent matter with high stakes for the team. His short visit turns into something surprising when he reunites with Thea and sparks a change in both of their lives that will have long-lasting consequences.
It's going to be fun.
Yep, say bye to Thea, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, not surprising.
No.
Well, if we're going to say goodbye to Thea, and if her and Roy Harper get to drive off into the sunset a happy couple, I'd be fine with that.
Again, this gets back to what I've been saying for quite some time, that this show has an end state and the producers know where the show is going to end. They might be assuming that this is, I don't know if this is a good assumption or not, that this is the last season of Arrow. And if so, all the characters have a designated endpoint. And if the designated endpoint is Thea gets to go off into the sunset with Roy, that is an awesome ending. I will sign up for that. If it's something else, we'll have to see. I mean, we're only halfway through. We're not there yet. There's at least, what, 8 episodes until we get to this point. So we'll see. Yeah. But remember, if they're driving to a series finale for the season six finale, then definitely I could see something like this happening.
Me too.
Then also, Chris, since you said me too, we'll move on to our next and last news story of the week about The Flash.
That's right. So Wentworth Miller, we've heard that he's pretty much wrapping up his role as Captain / Citizen Cold. Well, we did find out he's returning for one more episode. Excuse me. While at a German Comic Con a few days ago, he confirmed he'll have one more episode to shoot for The Flash in January. He'll be donning the parka and working with the Scarlet Speedster one last time before he hangs the role up for good. Even though his contract is done once he shoots this episode of Flash, he did say he'd be open to showing up again in the future. In a quote, he said, "I love this character and I have a lot of affection for the cast. There are many reasons to come back. It just has to be the right story." So the real question is, when he shows up in The Flash in January, or when he films his episode in January, is he Captain Cold or Citizen Cold?
I hope it's Citizen Cold.
I do too. I like Leo.
I could see a flashback with him as Captain Cold, but definitely we need to button up that Citizen Cold arc because he hasn't made his way back to the Earth X yet.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, he has to do that to get back there. He is needed over there. I said that before. It's great to have him in The Flash, but he is really needed in Earth X because he's fighting Nazis, and that's somewhere that Citizen Cold needs to be. So I won't be sad to see him go. I'll be sad that we get limited Wentworth Miller in the universe, but I could see him coming back, especially if the show perpetuates another season or so. I can see him coming back for an episode here or there.
Like you said, just has to be the right story. And for a character that a lot of people like, I'm sure they'd find a way to get the right story.
Now, when an actor says this, especially an actor of Wentworth Miller's caliber, I don't know if it's necessarily I need to see the right story, or the right story has to be written into The Flash in order to bring me back, sort of thing. And in this case, I think it's the second rather than the first. Like, he's not looking for it has to be, I need to sign off in this story. It's more like the opportunity has to be there to bring me back.
I think it's more along the lines of it has to be the right use of the character, because I think he has a lot of fun playing both iterations of the character from the interviews he's talked about. I'm thinking he doesn't want it just to be like a throwaway, he's back for a good laugh, but more, there needs to be some meat to it is what he's thinking. And I could just be reading into it completely wrong. Wentworth Miller, if you're listening for some reason, please feel free to tweet us at Starling Tribune and let us know what the right story is to bring you back.
Well, remember in Stargate, right? Now I'll take this as an example. The character that was played by Terry Rothrell, is that her name? And Dr. Frazier on Stargate. She came back for an episode, and it wasn't her original character. It was from a parallel universe, much the way that Citizen Cold is. I can see Wentworth Miller coming back in a future story that's like that. It's kind of the good use of the character, but it had to have been the right story to bring him back into The Flash or the CW universe. So I guess I'll stand by what I think, in that it's more of along the lines of character be darned. It's the ability has to be there to bring back the character more so, because he can shape the character once he's back.
Could be.
All right. Michelle, any last words on that?
Yeah, I think it just has to be something substantial. If that Cold is a part of, he just doesn't want to stand there in the back and, you know, shoot his gun a couple of times. It's going to have some meat to it.
All right. Fair enough. So if you're interested in talking about that or talking about anything else geeky, we have an entire network to talk geeky stuff, right, Chris?
That's right, SP. We've got a network of shows, 20 plus shows, the Gunna Geek Network, which you can see on my mic flag if you're watching our live video right now. Like I said, 20 plus shows that cover a variety of topics. You're familiar with us? We're one of the more narrowly focused shows. We just talk about Arrow and the Arrowverse. We've got other things that talk about geek culture in general, that talk about Magic the Gathering, that do in-depth dives into complex issues in geek living and geek topics, all sorts of stuff. We really do encourage you to go check out some of the other great podcasts on the network. But each week we like to highlight one specific show, give you a taste of what that other show is all about, and say, hey, maybe you should go check that out yourself. So this week, I want to talk to you guys about episode 43 of the In Defense Of cast. This is entitled The Geek Glad Game 2017. Happy holidays. Joined by Nicole Mazza of the Terminus podcast, we run down all of the gifts the geeks and fandom communities have been given this year. So really, go check out In Defense Of and all of the other podcasts on the network by heading over to GunnaGeek.com and clicking on the network button, or just go to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. But guys, I think it is time for us to start wrapping things up. A big thank you to everyone who did watch us live on Twitch and Mixer and YouTube. We saw you in the chat room. We had some conversations back and forth. It was a lot of fun. Don't forget, you can watch the replays of these videos on the Gonna Geek YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/GonnaGeek. And feel free to download this audio episode and the entire back catalog over at starlingtribune.com.
Remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the close of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag stay in engineering school.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag I'd up swipe for Gideon.
What? You wouldn't? Yeah, I would. Amy Pemberton is awesome. Amy, if you happen to be listening to this, we would welcome you on the Starling Tribune at any time.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag your salad sucks. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.